Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 62, the Scott Pollard episode, as Pollard wore number 62 for three seasons as a member of the Indiana Pacers. Although I'm sure our pal Bruce may recall Pollard as a member of the Boston Celtics championship team in 2008, Pollard should definitely be remembered for his variety of different beards and hairdos he sported throughout his career. Feel free to Google that for entertaining examples of that in your leisure there. But before we get to our big special guest here tonight, I do want to remind everyone, BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and the latest matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And tonight, Bruce, I'm going to start with you doing the introduction here for tonight's big special guest.
Thanks, Ross. Normally when I introduce a guest, I have to do a little research on them to make sure I capture their essence, but I didn't have to do any homework on tonight's guest. All you need to know is this. Back in 2014, when Cassidy Howarth and I started working together on a daily basis, it took literally no time at all for me to realize she was one of the 10 greatest living Americans. In a business like TV, where many people have mastered the skill of faking sincerity, Cassidy never had to because she was the real deal. When I was the coordinating producer of NBA Coast to Coast and NBA Tonight, Cassidy was doing a lot of different things at ESPN, but I knew she was a hoophead, and I made it my business to request her to host my NBA shows. And thankfully, the ESPN talent office agreed, and she brought her warmth, knowledge, work ethic, and sense of fun to those now defunct NBA shows. And on a personal level, she's the type of treasured friend everybody wishes they had. Welcome, Straight Cass Homie.
Oh my gosh. You're going to make me cry this late at night. I can't handle it. I mean, you changed my life with that decision. Truly, you really are one of the people who I can't thank enough. You really changed my life. And you know what we were talking off air that those days, I often think of those days on NBA Tonight and NBA Coast to Coast as some of the best years of my life. So I'm so excited to be here with you guys. And like I said, World B. Freer and Ross. I mean, no offense, but it's really because anything Killa wants, Killa gets. So I'm here in college. I couldn't be more excited.
You know, we loved our NBA Tonight hip hop nicknames. Okay. It was one of the ways that we built chemistry with our crew. I mean, you were the ringleader. I mean, Killa B, are you kidding me? That's what I should have like in that little graphic there instead of my official Twitter handle. And you even coached George Karl on how to create Swaggy G on April Fool's Day of 2014. Remember?
Yeah. It does feel like a blur to think about those times. And the fact that, we got him to just read the prompter and he went along with it. Those were fun. I even remember showing our NBA Tonight cipher to Lil Wayne. He actually thought it was pretty good. So if we can get one of the greatest rappers of all time to co-sign our terrible rapping, I think, I think that's one for the books.
You know, I want to let the other guys get in on this too, but I want to ask you one question to get started. You've parlayed those early years into an amazing career that is just roaring along. As a kid growing up in Evanston, Illinois, is this the basketball life you always dreamed of?
I want to say yes, but I don't even know if I had what I'm doing right now, even in my wildest dreams. I always knew I wanted to cover sports, but I guess like as a young girl, when I was imagining what that would look like, I didn't fully understand, you know, what was possible. And, you know, being able to be a part of some of the biggest games during one of my favorite seasons in my favorite sport. It's hard to say that, like, yes, this is what I dreamed of, because I think it's even more than what I dreamed of. Being able to cover the NBA and be a part of, you know, broadcast teams that like make me better. And I pinch myself every day. It's truly, truly quite a dream come true, to say the least.
And Cassidy, a question I had for you is, we've all seen your show Hoop Streams, which has been a huge hit on ESPN. There we go. The digital platform. You know, you're also doing a ton of linear TV, such as sideline reporting during games. Do you have a different approach to how you do that content on conventional TV versus digital?
Yeah, I think just naturally it's different because of just the setup of linear TV versus digital media. You know, with Hoop Streams, there's no commercials and it's less buttoned up. You know, we're not having to, you know, get to commercial break and to hit certain, you know, time frames. So I think just like innately that creates a different type of conversation tone and pacing, if you will. But, you know, Hoop Streams and all of the digital projects that I've worked on over the years, I think with digital media, it's changing constantly, how people consume it, how people view each different platform, and what type of content should be on there. I think, you know, linear, there's been kind of a strategy and a system that's been in place that, you know, for years that I think still plays today. Digital, I think you're along for the ride and you're trying to figure out how to like ride the wave, but also get ahead of the wave. So I don't think you can ever be too comfortable in the digital space, then you get stale, or, you know, because the way that I think digital media works is you're trying to seep into people's everyday behavior. And I think that changes constantly. I think that's one of the things that got me involved in digital media was my curiosity and my interest in how it was going to change over the years. When I graduated from Northwestern, you know, it was during the time when Twitter was launching and Facebook, you know, was kind of finding its footing. And so that kind of timing of when I was starting out in the workforce kind of allowed me to grow with digital media. But now we're in a place where everyone kind of understands digital media, but doesn't know like which direction it's going to go. Like new apps are popping up, old apps are changing before our eyes. And so, you know, I don't think it's going to look the same in 5 years. So I don't even know anymore what the question was. I mentioned showcase.
That's a great answer.
The front of mine. I'm like, oh, I don't know. You know, like I'm thinking, like, where is it going to go next? Even Hoop Streams, even like from what I saw from the first year of doing Hoop Streams to even last year, it's different. The audience is different. There's less urgency. So, you know, I think I'm tasked with trying to figure out what's next. For sure.
Hey, Cassie, your colleague Doris Burke will be the network's top NBA analyst next season, along with Doc Rivers. Tell us what Doris is like as a colleague to work with. What's she like for you?
I mean, It really is quite a gift to be able to not only like call Doris a colleague, but you know, she is really one of my best friends right now. And like, I know that's a pretty hard humble brag, but yeah, Doris and I are very close, and you know, she is the goat for a reason. She is even cooler than you think she is. And she is such a hard worker. And, you know, I was talking to her during this whole period of the decision process of you know, being named to that number one team. And I just kept telling her, it's like, man, you've earned this, like all of the hard work that you've put in over the years, like working on WNBA, women's college basketball, men's college basketball, NBA, sidelines, you know, analysts, like the receipts are there. She's done everything and mastered it all. And she has put in the work. And so now she gets to like reap the rewards. And I think that she is beyond deserving. But she is also just someone who is deserving to be celebrated, because she is a wonderful human being, an amazing friend, and just the ultimate pro. And so when you have all those things, you know, I think all of you have been in this business, in any business, you know, there's some people who, you know, get to the top finding different routes. I think it's pretty clear how Doris was able to get to the top of the mountain through hard work, through, you know, earning respect from her peers, earning respect from her colleagues, having people who, you know, root for her because they genuinely appreciate and respect her. I'm just so happy for her. And, you know, even though I look up to her, and she is someone who, you know, I hope I could have an ounce of her, her, you know, dedication to this profession as I go along. But I mean, I'm just so proud of her. She just is like, she's just amazing. So that's what I think of, you know, the decision. They made the right decision. She is our best analyst, and I can't wait to hear her, you know, call the NBA finals on TV. She's been calling the NBA finals on radio for the last 4 years. You know, she's been calling the, on the number two team for a number of years. So I'm going to miss being on, you know, a playoff team with her, but I'm excited to get, you know, another season underway with her, since we often, you know, get a lot of games during the regular season together. But I think her, Doc, and Mike, I think that could be a really magical team. It's hard to kind of switch up from the longest tenured, you know, broadcast team. But I think they did a really amazing job of finding, you know, two dynamic personalities. And of course, Mike Breen, who is just the consummate pro. So I'm really excited to hear what that sounds like. And I think it's going to be, you know, a great listen.
Now, Cassidy, being so close to Doris, and obviously we know her work on the mic, she knows the game better than pretty much everyone that does the game-to-game calls, especially on a national scale there. Is there one story that really stands out over years working together, whether it be on camera or maybe off, since you mentioned how cool she is off the court as well? Is there just one story that really stands out that you could share with us all?
A story about Doris. I mean, it's so hard because I just have so many, like, I just, the things when you're asking me that, I just am thinking of all of, like, the post-game drinks and the laughs we share, and just like how excited she was when she became a grandmother. And, you know, it's just, I think I watch her a lot and see how people react to her and how gracious she is in those moments. And it's just like a reminder of, you know, what we get to do is so, it's a privilege. And she handles everything with such grace. I mean, being a pioneer and, you know, having that type of pressure, if you will, on her shoulders, and she carries it all so well. I don't know. I wish I had a better story for you. I just, whenever I think of Doris, I just think of all of our phone calls and all of our meals together and, you know, all of our like chit chatting before games. Like usually we, you know, we'll sit in makeup room together and throw on a podcast and just cackle at each other. So I mean, like, I'm sure it'll come to like a good story will come to me, but I think, you know, really the best thing I can tell you is that she's just so down to earth, that, you know, like she brings my like anxiety down before a big game, because it's just like, I know I got my girl with me. So, like we're going to get through this together. Okay. And oftentimes I'll like hit her during the game and ask her like, can I ask this question? Or, you know, what did you think of this report? And she'll hit me up, and it's just support. And I feel that from her. And so that to me is just like, I'm the luckiest girl in the world to have that.
Okay, I'm going to take you from the calming presence of the great Doris Burke, mm-hmm. and I'm going to ask you to relive something that I spoke about a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
2 weeks ago when we did our Hall of Fame show, I told a Greg Popovich story.
Oh, no.
That involved you. Can you take us back to Christmas Day 2015 and describe your very first live sideline assignment?
I mean, the fact that I had never done NBA sidelines before. So I was with you in studio for, you know, I was a house cat, as I'd like to call myself. They didn't let me out of the Bristol headquarters until, you know, that Christmas Day. They're like, hey, can you do sidelines? It wasn't just like, hey, can you do this random Wednesday sidelines, you know, in November. It's like, hey, we need you on Christmas Day. And we need you to be in Houston as the Rockets and James Harden are hosting like Tony Parker, San Antonio Spurs, and Greg Popovich. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I was a little naive. I'm like, yes, Christmas Day. And then as it got closer and closer, I'm like, oh, shoot. I got to interview Greg Popovich. This is okay. All right. But I'm like, it's Christmas Day. I'm on the phone with my dad. I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, maybe I should do something like a little different, get a smile out of him. I don't know. And then before the game, we're having the coaches meeting with Greg Popovich. I'm on the call with PJ Carlesimo and Ryan Rucco. And PJ and I had done, you know, NBA Tonight together for the last 2 years. So and of course, PJ was on Greg Popovich's staff. And so pregame, PJ is like, Pop, you better be good to my girl. You know, you better be good to my girl. And Pop, this was not at the peak of his like, you know, sideline reporter bullying, but like, you know, on the way down, I would say. And he goes, well, you know, I don't really like those interviews. Oh, no, duh. We know you don't like those interviews. But he was like, there's only two good questions to ask. You know, what did you like and what do you want to improve on? And I'm just like, okay, I'm writing that down. And PJ's trying his hardest, but I think it's having the opposite effect. I'm like trying to make sure that, you know, Pop treats me well. Unfortunately for me, like, it's always the hardest to have a coach heading into the fourth quarter for obvious reasons. But I thankfully had Greg Popovich after the first, since they were the visiting team. But they were losing. And I had this whole plan, but I was still nervous because I had asked the first question. And he was in my head of like, well, there's only two questions you can ask. Those are the only two acceptable questions. And I'm thinking about, well, what happened in that first quarter? Down, why are they losing? There's so much stuff that goes through your head. And I get up there. I'm so nervous. And I think I said my first question was, what did you like about what happened in the first quarter? And I think I said it like 100 miles per hour because I just wanted to get it out. And he gave me an answer. I think he said pick and roll defense. So like he didn't, you know, shrug me off or, you know, say that's stupid. He gave me an answer. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. I stuck to my plan. I'm like, well, because it's Christmas, we thought we'd give you a gift and I'm not going to ask you a second question. And he really wanted to give me a laugh, but because they were losing, he gave me a little smirk and he walked away. But I feel nice. Like I kind of, you know, I always say that this was like, oh my gosh, I had Greg Popovich, my first ever sideline game. But the fact that it was Christmas Day, I had like a little out because I had, you know, I could come up with that little kind of kitschy idea. But I survived. But it wasn't the last time. And I got popped many times after that.
That was such a boss move. I swear to God. I mean, it really was. Not only was it a boss move, but it was like a boss move by a quote unquote rookie, right? I mean, not you were a rookie, but rookie in that role. And it was like, I mean, you handled him, Cass. You know, you're too humble. You're too humble to say that, but you just handled him. Speaking of handling business, all right, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit.
Yeah.
You became a mom almost 5 years ago. Viv turns 5 in December. When we worked together, it was just you and Adam. But in those crazy, hours and days off, it was still challenging for you.
Yeah.
But now that you got a little girl that you're raising, what's been the biggest change you've had to deal with in having a family while working such a demanding schedule?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I want to say that it's easy and it's getting easier, but I think it's getting harder. I thought it was hard when she was young, you know, but really, you know, we had a schedule and she had no sense of time. When I went to the bubble, she was, I don't even know. She was just a little over a year and I was gone for 7 weeks and it was torture for me, but she didn't have an idea the difference between a month versus, a week. So that was fine. I think now she understands, and she understands when she sees my suitcase, I'm leaving. And, you know, if when I say I have to work, it means I'm going to be gone for a couple days and, you know, that I may miss a practice or I may miss a performance. And, you know, it's hard to disappoint her. And I think the disappointment is different because she can actually say that. And I think, you know, any parent can kind of relate to that, whether you're traveling or not. You know, you always want to be as present as possible. And so I think just the balance of it all, I mean, Bruce, you talk about like how I was such a boss back then, you know, and then I think to a certain extent, maybe I was, you know, when I was younger, and could focus all of my attention on work, it allowed me to be creative and almost like more free in my work. But now, you know, being a parent, it's constantly, having to, you know, manage my life and my daughter's life and make sure it's in concert with my husband and our family and making sure that I'm being in two places at once, but also making sure I'm present when I'm in each place. So, you know, I often struggle with like the multitasking and if I'm finding the right balance and the anxiety of not doing either job as best as I can do it. And so I think it's just going to be an evolution. I mean, I'm just a different person than I was when I, you know, gave Greg Popovich that gift. And there are often times where I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm a better person. And there are times where I'm like, man, I wish I was better. I think it's just an evolution of just, you know, being a parent and, you know, growing in this business that is constantly forcing you to evolve. I love being Viv's mom and there's not a better job in this world, in my eyes. But it you know, there's a constant having to like keep up on both sides. So I'm doing my best, and I think that's what every parent, you know, can hope to say.
Okay, so you obviously have a big presence on social media, but like, who are some of your favorite people to follow on social media, Twitter, Instagram, whatever? Who are some of the people you like to follow?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. Like, X, formerly known as Twitter, you know, has changed a lot. And back to our conversation about digital media, I think my use of it has changed. My use of Instagram has changed a bit too. I think also back to the conversation about parenthood, I'm trying to force myself off of social media when it's tough, when it's like part of the job. I'm on TikTok too much, I think, to the dismay of my husband. Don't tell him. He thinks I deleted the app. But, you know, I feel like whenever I'm on TikTok, I'm like, but I'm bettering myself because I'm, you know, I'm watching videos or teaching me how to do things that I'm never going to do. But like, at least I'll have that knowledge. And look, I'm getting smarter as opposed to, you know, Instagram, where I'm looking at people's vacations. I don't know. I think when it comes to who am I following that I think gives me any type of value, it's news sites, you know, like Us, and I enjoy The Athletic as well. Anything that's going to help me like read more, because I need to read a lot more, and not just kind of read a headline. So yeah, I think I'm like in a dead zone though with social media. I'm trying to, the summertime, I'm like trying to not be on it. I'm like, my goal is when I get that Sunday, your screen time, I want it to say it's down 30%, you know, like that's the goal right now, at least right now, when I don't have to, unless, you know, there's James Harden news or Damian Lillard news. Like, I want to try to stay off my phone. I've read three books this summer. Okay. I'm not saying that they're, you know, like War and Peace, but they're books. Okay. I've read actual words inside a real life book. So that's what I'm proud of. I've read books, and I've learned how to French braid my daughter's hair. And I feel like that is a successful summer.
That is awesome. All right. All right. I'm going to give you a break from social media. Thank you for retweeting our little promo about tonight's show.
Oh, yes, of course. You know,
so thanks for dipping your toes back into that, into that, you know, just for us. We love you and we appreciate you. I mean, we got a lot more ground we want to cover with you, but it's time for us to move on. So I'm going to turn it over to our point guard, Ross, who's going to move us along into the second quarter. Ross?
Yeah. So, Cassidy, one thing we do on the show during the off season is pay homage to the football season with what we like to call two-a-days. So we pick two teams in the NBA, one in the Eastern Conference, one in the Western Conference. And tonight for our second quarter, we're going to start off with your hometown, Chicago Bulls. Thought it'd be great to ask you on them. Obviously, they had an interesting off season. Really didn't make any big changes.
Was it interesting, Ross? Was it interesting?
I mean, I think some of their stuff.
It was boring and crappy.
If you look, I'm a huge Javon Carter fan, so I think that's a little bit interesting there. Okay. But I mean, the Central Division in general is very interesting. We've got some young, talented teams coming up with the Indiana Pacers, the Detroit Pistons. Yeah,
that's
Pistons.
The reason why it wasn't that interesting, Ross, They're going to continue to get knocked down. I gotta like, you asked me to put my fan hat on, and I gotta bring my emotions down.
Rant on, go.
So what's your, I guess my big takeaway, and you're kind of already revealing some of your answer here, is kind of like, what's the hope being a Bulls fan? Like, what are you optimistic about going into next season?
I don't know. Okay.
Well, thanks for coming on.
I mean, look.
Okay, I don't think there's any other team that would elicit that reaction.
They were focused on re-signing all their guys. Okay, yep. They re-signed Vooch, they re-signed Kobe, they re-signed Io. I know you like the Javon Carter signing, Torrey Craig. I mean, both of them, they played well last year for their respective teams. DeMar, another year older. Lonzo out again for the season. Zach LaVine, mystery of if he even wants to step foot back in Chicago. What is Patrick Williams? Will he ever live up to the height? I'm so bored of that conversation. Just show it to me. I just think that they're in purgatory. That's my thought on the Chicago Bulls. They're just stuck in the middle, and that's like the worst place to be in the NBA. I hope Kobe can get better. He showed improvements in other areas despite having, you know, a career low in scoring last year. Io definitely had a sophomore slump, but he is a mature young man who has some like quiet leadership abilities. So I think DeMar has taken him under his wing. But I don't know what they want out of DeMar and Zach, and if they can really work together successfully. And I think Lonzo's injury is a cloud hanging over this team that unfortunately no one wants to talk about, even though it's, you know, in the news right now. I don't know what I feel about the Bulls. I feel like they're not, you know, a contender, and they're not a necessarily, they could be a lottery team, but they're not going to be a top lottery team. So that, those are my thoughts. I hope I have more games in Chicago. I hope I'm wrong. I, you know, I did that play-in game last year in Toronto, and that was so fun. And that was amazing. Bring DeMar's daughter to every game, please. You know, like let's start there. Like get DR front row seats to every game, and let's make this thing exciting. Other than that, I got nothing. I you know, I think everyone was giving Gar Pax a lot of, you know, flack for just what they did over the years on letting. And you know what it is as a Bulls fan? It's watching guys like Jimmy Butler,
yeah,
you know, walk away. Lauri Markkanen, walk away. Like, I just don't understand, you know, why Chicago, a top three market in the country, doesn't draw more interest in players. I don't know. I'm not saying that I'm bummed. It's just like, I think they're going to win games, and they're going to be some exciting moments for Bulls fans to like cheer about. But I, you know, ultimately we know this league is about like what happens in May and June. I just don't think that they're going to be anywhere close to that.
Gee, why would anyone think you're bummed? I mean, you said, gee, I don't know. How could anyone get that impression, Cass?
I'm just being a realist about it. You know what? I want to be able to cover more Bulls games. And
no, I hear you. Look, I mean, a couple weeks ago, one of our listeners asked us, you know, Ross does a thing where he solicits questions from our listeners, and they were asking which team confused us the most heading into the offseason. And I said the Bulls, because I mean, their big offseason move was Ross's guy, Javon, okay? But they signed Nick Vucevic for like $60 million. His best basketball is well behind him, okay? He's not getting better. He's good, but he's not getting better. And you mentioned Zach LaVine. He's got $174 million left on his deal. He has never impacted winning. His teams never make the playoffs. So I don't blame you for being bummed, but I think you might have saved us some time, because based on how bleak everything looks, Ross, I don't know, can we move on to the Warriors soon?
I think Will B has one question here.
Go ahead, World.
You still got one?
Yeah, I was just curious, because I'll be the optimist of all people, the Knicks fan being optimist about the Bulls, but here it is. They have a top five defense, or they did last year.
Which was like out of the blue, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it was really weird to see the transformation, but the weird thing about this team was their big three, the Bulls' efficiency was bad, was worse when the big three were on the court together. Right. They were negative in the efficiency the last 2 years, actually, not just last year, the year before.
You're being optimistic here?
I'm trying, because I'm going to.
He's usually really negative. They play, yeah,
14-9 after the
as a Knicks fan, this is his get back for the 90s.
This is it'll take a lot more than just this next minute to make up for the Jordan years. But what do you think their ceiling is in the Eastern Conference this coming season? Realistically, at best case scenario, given the way the East was last year, when you see the Miami Heat go from nearly out in the play-in tournament to the finals, where do you see the Bulls realistically as their ceiling for this season?
I don't know. I think there's like question marks. Obviously, we're like, what's going to happen with the Sixers? But to I think Ross's point earlier, just the I think the Pacers are definitely going to be better this year. I think Giannis is going to be on complete revenge tour. I think that the Celtics, I don't know what's going to happen with the Celtics, to be honest. I think they're still going to be a top team. But will they have the same start and the same expectations? I'm sure, but I think they could be a little bit of like a wild card with what happens with Porzingis and his injury, given that they, traded away their heart and soul and Marcus Smart for him. That could create some weird blood there. Sorry, Bruce, but I'm sure you have kind of examined it and figured out, that things are going to be a little different there. The Knicks are better, I think. Always better. I mean, you got the Villanova, New York Knicks.
We got everybody except Jay Wright from Villanova.
Yeah, right. Exactly. what is their ceiling? Okay, I think that they could be a play-in team and win a play-in game like they did last year, and then maybe have a series. Maybe. Boom. And lose in the first round. That's my, don't come for me, Bulls fans. I'm just, I'm rooting for me to be wrong too, but I'm becoming impatient. And I don't, I had this conversation with my dad, who's a huge Bulls fan, and he's not feeling the same type of disappointment as I am, or impatience. He feels like, there's some hope there. There's something to like look forward to with the young guys, and he likes the additions too. And I just, I think ultimately, if DeMar, as much as I like DeMar, is he still going to be, the straw that stirs everything? Is that the right move for growth on this team? I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to talk about another star that might be stirring something up in Golden State. But first, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the second half. And we're back with the start of the second half here. And Cassidy, hopefully we'll get a little bit more optimism and excitement out of you with this team. And that is out west with the Golden State Warriors. My first question for you, of course, is surrounding Chris Paul. It definitely seems like he's going to have to come off the bench. I don't see why he wouldn't. Doesn't seem like that's quite clear to him yet, or it's come to his acceptance yet. What's your whole take on Chris Paul joining the Golden State Warriors, and do you think he can have a positive impact on their chances next season?
I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, they had to do something kind of drastic. And I think what was my thought when he got traded? I think it was the same thought that he had, which was shock. I think they're trying to be honest about it. They're trying to be honest about how it is a little weird fit, but they're saying that, him coming off the bench and running that second unit is going to be the way that they kind of like extend this lineup a little more. But Chris is a big personality. He's a big voice. And you also have a big voice in Draymond Green, who has, you know, admitted that they didn't like each other. And you have a big voice in Steve Kerr, you know, who's also a big personality. You got three veteran like voices, and then you have Steph, who's the face, who knows his the time the clock is ticking on, you know, their window. I think he like summed it up recently perfectly when he said, like, you know, we're the hunter now, not the hunted, and that this year is the run, that yep. and that they have to reassess, you know, at the end of the year to figure out what they need to do to keep them in the conversation. And I think that can maybe even extend to what happened this year. They reassessed and they added Chris to try to figure out, you know, how do we remain in like in motion without Steph on the floor. And so I think it's different. I mean, I had a chance to talk to Steph during Summer League in Vegas, and you know, him and Chris have gotten a lot of run. And I think it's, you know, when you're with one of the most gracious superstars in professional sports, he makes it easy to kind of transition onto a team when you're bringing on such a veteran experience, big name as Chris Paul. You know, Steph, we saw that with Kevin Durant. Even if there was all the other competing voices around of Steph and KD, they had a cordial relationship, if you will. But, you know, how will the rest of the team deal with all of the baggage that Chris Paul brings? Because Chris is still searching for his own first title. So he has pressure on his shoulders too. And for him to transition to coming off the bench with that thought, I think it's a lot to kind of handle and manage. But, you know, this is a championship team. And also you don't have Bob Myers. Bob Myers, you know, he kept a lot of things together, including like Draymond. Draymond respected the hell out of Bob Myers. And so there's a lot of changes happening for the Warriors. And, you know, they have to take a win now approach. And I think that's what they've done. But the West is hard. They're going to be competing with the Lakers and Suns and Grizzlies and Kings. And I think it's actually going to be really interesting with the Warriors and the Suns. You know, they were both eliminated in the second round, and, you know, they have like links with each other, given KD is now with the Suns and Chris Paul is now with the Warriors. So I think that's going to be a really interesting kind of where each of them fall within the West during the season. And, you know, I think we all see that the clock is ticking.
I'm glad you brought up Bob Myers, because that was really my next question.
Yeah.
He's your new teammate now, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be working with you guys on ESPN. And I'm wondering, I mean, Steph is 35. Draymond's like 31 or 32, 33. Clay is over 30. CP3, as you mentioned, will be 39. Do you think he saw the writing on the wall and realizes we are heading straight for a rebuild in the next year or two, and he wanted to get out before he had to kind of emotionally go through the exercise of ripping apart such a classic team?
Yeah, I don't know for sure, like, what his decision-making was, but I think that that's a pretty pretty good assumption. You know, I think everyone can see it. And I think they've been pretty, like, blunt about it, that they know that the writing's on the wall. They know that, you know, if they want to add to this dynasty, it has to happen now. And his contract being up and the decision to, you know, not re-sign, I think was also just, he had a good run. And I think,
I'll say,
you know, I don't know. I can't wait to actually, you know, get to talk to him a little bit more. You know, now that he's joined our staff, and I think I'll be doing some games with him. So, I'm excited to like pick his brain and kind of hear how things, came together with him joining us. But I think he's going to have to talk a lot about the Warriors on the air. You know, being an analyst is being an analyst. Like you have a responsibility of giving your opinion and sharing your insight. So I think we're all going to be kind of get a better understanding of, you know, where he feels the Warriors are right now and, where they may be headed in the future.
Yeah, came back to CP3 for a second. I know he's going to help them defensively. The getting more out of Andrew Wiggins, having him around is going to help them defense because they had real major – we talked about it during the season, real major troubles on the road defensively compared to at home. And having Gary Payton the second there for a full season will obviously help. And getting rid of Jordan Poole will help them defensively too. People don't realize. But I'm curious because the offense – Chris Paul's offense is unlike nothing that the Warriors do offensively.
Right.
Chris Paul is pick and roll, and no team passed the ball more last season than the Warriors. Yes. And they traditionally do it. You talked about the chemistry between everybody there, you know, how Chris fits in. How do you think he's going to fit in with that team offensively? How's that, in your thoughts, how do you think that's going to look?
I mean, I think oddly enough, what I've been gathering from – you know, the team and people around the team is that like, he may be the oldest player on the team, but the reason why they're bringing him in is to help the young guys and playing him. I mean, they seem pretty dead set on the fact that he is going to be just a game changer for Moses Moody. And I just think, I think that, with that second unit, I think, you know, he's just going to give them a little bit more like structure. And so I think that that's what they're trying to do. They know they need to figure out how to move on from the core set of guys. And I just think that he's going to be a huge impact on Moses, and then Jonathan Kuminga is the other guy that they really are excited to see his growth. I mean, I think a lot of the backlash on the Warriors last season was, you know, why aren't we seeing growth from the younger guys? Why aren't we seeing these guys take another leap? Why can't they stand on their own 2 feet? Why is there so much reliance on Steph Curry and, you know, Draymond and the old guys? And so I think, you know, it may not be the way that the Warriors have run their offense in the past, but I think it's the thought of how can we best set up our future players, our young guys to succeed. And I think they saw that in Chris Paul. So we'll see. I mean, we've seen spurts in Kuminga, we've seen spurts in obviously, like, we know Wiggins has it. I think I want it to work for all of them. You know, I think a lot of people want Chris to win his first ring. We've been saying that the last couple teams that he's been on. But I think, you know, I would keep saying that the clock is ticking on all of that.
Now, Cassidy, as we get into the fourth quarter here, you had mentioned it earlier about maybe some shakeups around the NBA, but seems that all is quiet on the Western front as of lately with Damian Lillard, and not so quiet out East in Philly with James Harden. Harden today here on Tuesday was just fined $100,000 by the NBA for his comments in regards to his general manager, Daryl Morey. Let's start with Damian Lillard. Just having followed the news and being on the inside at ESPN, I mean, at this point, would you be shocked if he's traded in the offseason? I feel like this is going to trickle down into the season.
Yeah, I mean, especially since he's basically saying he only wants to be traded to one team. So, you know, I think it's about figuring out what the Blazers are worth. I mean, what they're willing to accept. You know, what does tanking look like to them? I do think that Scoot Henderson is a special player.
I'd agree.
And so, you know, I think that draft pick is at the root of a lot of the reason why they're in this situation with, you know, Dame wanting this trade. So I think something's going to happen. I don't know like what the Blazers are willing to do here. I don't think that the loyalty to keep Dame is that's not the motive here. I think they're trying to not give him away as they should. Yeah. I think they do want to give that contract away too, though, you know? I don't know. I mean, I think it's like quiet right now, but to your point, like, I think Eric Spoelstra's in the Philippines right now. Shout out Filipino Jackson. Like we're in like a dead zone other than James Harden. So, you know, I think everyone's just kind of taking a break. There was so much around Dame. And I think, you know, we're seeing some reports that like maybe the Blazers would accept something without Tyler Hero. And then, you know, what other kind of teams can get involved. But, you know, it's the end of August. Everyone's right. Kind of like, don't like they put out their like, you know, vacation messages. Like we're headed into Labor Day. I think come September, we'll start to pick up. People will start returning some phone calls.
All right, Cass, you've been so generous with your time. The show's 48 minutes and we're a little bit past that. Could we ask you to spend a couple more minutes with us? Because there's a few more things we were hoping to
ask you. Course.
Okay, cool. All right, James Harden. Is this dude ever going to be happy? I mean, he should be so proud of the way he played last year and how he helped Joel Embiid win the MVP. And actually was on a team that had a legitimate chance and probably should have gone to the conference finals and who knows, maybe even beyond. But it's like, is there even a market for this guy at this point, do you think?
I don't know. I'm so torn on this Harden stuff. Like, I know at face value, this is his third team that he's pushing himself out of. And covering a lot of Sixers games last year, I was proud of him too, you know, adjusting his game. And he looked great in that role. And he looked fit and he was working hard. And him and Joel, when they were working, they were unstoppable. So I have a hard time just, you know, if he had an issue with Doc or, you know, like the coaching was the problem, like, all right, you got a new head coach, you're with the MVP. What is it? But then on the business side of things, he did talk a lot about how he took a pay cut, you know, in order for them to sign PJ Tucker and get the right pieces. But you're right. Like, when is he going to be like, what is going to satisfy him? The fact that we heard the trade rumors at the beginning of last season, I honestly don't know if he knows what he wants. You know, does he want to win a title? Does he just want to be paid? Does he want to be the man again? I don't know. I wish that he would remain with the Sixers because, you know, I don't want to see another year wasted of Joel Embiid. I just don't. And I think that's what the Sixers, I think that's the position Daryl Morey is in and why, according to James Harden, he, you know, went back on his word, is because they can't waste any years, any prime years of Joel Embiid. They just, you know, this guy is incredible. Like, Joel is incredible. And they figured something out last year. But, you know, if it's, if the vibes aren't right, they're never going to figure it out, you know, fully. So what do I think of James? Like, I wish he wasn't feeding the narrative around him. You know, I feel like he did a great job last year of kind of like fixing his reputation after, you know, forcing his way out in Houston. And, you know, it was almost forgiven a little bit of what happened in Brooklyn because of the Kyrie situation. And it seemed like he just wanted a hoop and, you know, Kyrie and all the vaccinations situation. And that's why he, you know, wanted out there and that connection. It's just, it's a bummer, like all around from any which way you're looking at this situation. Because, you know, they like, if he doesn't show up to training camp, I mean, that's all like, that's another step back that this team has to make because they have a brand new coach and brand new system and they need to all gain trust again. And it just feels very disjointed. And, you know, it doesn't seem like James is going to be showing up to camp. So I don't know. Bummer. That's all I want to say about that.
Yeah. Understood. As we get ready to sort of wrap things up here, we want to play a little game with you called Word Association. I'm sure you've played it a million times in a million different ways. We're all going to ask you about one person, okay? I am going to ask you about somebody from ESPN and give me the word associate and a brief summation of how you feel or felt about this individual. Stuart Scott.
Mentor. He's still a mentor for me today because I just think about all the times when, you know, I'd watch him and how hard he would work, even through like the excruciating pain he was dealing with his cancer battle. And he just, you know, watching him enjoy every second when that red light went on and not taking for granted the jobs that we have, and just, you know, having it give him some like life, when he was, you know, literally it was being sucked out of him. He was an extraordinary human being, and to have had just like the small amount of time I had to call him a friend, you know, I think about often when I'm second guessing, you know, my commitment or, you know, if I'm cut out for this business. And so I still consider him my biggest mentor because he is a constant reminder to be grateful for this career that I have.
Cassidy, Stephen A. Smith.
You know what's so fun? Quiet. That would be my word. Because you want to know the funniest thing that I like to tell people is that whenever I'm around Stephen A., I'm always like, what did you say? I can't, what? Because like when he's not on air, he like whispers. Mm-hmm. It's like he's saving his voice, or he's just like, he talks very low, you know, like he's just, I'm like, what did you say? Like, that like to me is the funniest thing. I'm not saying that it's like, it's all an act. It's who he is.
Totally not an act.
That's the reason why, because he's constantly on. Even when he's off, he knows like how to like recharge. And so when he's not on air, he's like, I'll talk to you, but I'm not going to, you know, like there's moments where I need to reboot. And it's just so funny. He's like, he walks slow and he's like, he talks slow and it's very quiet. And that's my takeaway from Stephen A.
All right, Cassidy, with you being the Northwestern grad and me being the Phoenix resident, Michael Wilbon.
Oh my God. Wilbon. Just, oh, I don't even know. I don't, like, what's the best word for him? I don't want to, like, demean him by calling him a teddy bear, but, like, it's just, I want to hug him each time because he's just goodness personified. That man is, like, just good. He is a good person who, whenever I see him, puts a smile on my face. He is so warm and so just a wonderful human being. And again, another person I'm like, how am I so lucky that I get to call him a friend too? I mean, all these legends. But he wears his pride on his sleeve for all of the things that he loves. And because he has all this, like this, all of that on him, that's what he exudes. It's just love and warmth and goodness. And he just is the best.
Absolutely. I mean, he's an absolute legend. Well, Cassidy, we thank you so much for coming on tonight's show with us. It's been a joy listening to you share some of your stories. And of course, we enjoy all the work you do and look forward to what you have coming up for us this season in the NBA. We'll definitely be tuned in. And Bruce, I'll let you say a few final few words here to your dear friend, and we'll go ahead and wrap things up.
You're simply the best. That's just really, there's not much else to say. I love you. I'm so proud of all you've achieved. And I love watching you on TV. I never, ever, ever had, let alone a bad day. I never even had a bad hour working with you or being around you. You're the best.
Killa, thank you so much. And Chicago Bulls, Eastern Conference champions. Let's go. Hey. Let's
look at go. That. It just changed like that. And with that, that will do it with this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everyone.